I wonder how many of you were here last Sunday. Don't raise your hands, but I wasn't. I was away preaching in Rhode Island, so I don't know whether you heard the gospel lesson last week or not. But even if you weren't here, I'll give you a quick summary of what went on. We were at a party with Jesus. You see, Jesus just loves to party. And because many of you love parties, this sounds great. You can forget your petty moralistic religion of rules and regulations. Jesus proclaims a religion of hope and hilarity. Jesus is determined to have everyone at this party, particularly the lowest and the least and the lost. Let's have a party. Which all sounds good. Maybe a little too good, you say. I wonder if that's why here in Luke's 14th chapter, Jesus switches immediately from party talk to cost of discipleship talk. What fool would build a tower, Jesus asks, if he doesn't sit down and figure out how many bricks he needs? Otherwise, he might begin to build and run out, and he would be mocked by his neighbors. What king goes to war and does not first sit down and figure out if he's got enough to do the job? Count the cost. Don't sign up for the course until you inquire about what's on the final exam. Don't volunteer for the job until you're sure you've got the support of your staff to help you. Count the cost. And if you heard last Sunday's gospel, you're probably saying to yourself, isn't this difficult? Last Sunday it was all grace and acceptance, free and flowing. Christianity was called a party and salvation was offered for nothing, and now here we have fine print, the hidden qualifications. What Jesus offers us is free. But anytime anybody offers you something, what's your first question? How much is this going to cost? Go ahead, try it free for 30 days and just try and get your name off our mailing list. Won't cost you a penny, gratis, free, although you'll be indebted to me for the rest of your life. You weren't born yesterday. You know there's no such thing as a free lunch. So after proclaiming God's free grace, now we get the bill. All right, Jesus, how much does this really cost? Great multitudes accompanied him, says Luke. You see, the Jesus movement is catching on, becoming popular. And so Jesus turns to the crowd and says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brothers and sisters, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. And that is tough talk. That is a high cost. In the workplace, we only ask for 9 to 5. Leave your family till supper time. But you see, Jesus costs more. Have any of you had to bury a father, a mother, a sister, or a brother? If you've ever had to let go like that, you can testify to the high cost that Jesus is demanding. Rather than celebrating his high ratings in the popularity polls, Jesus turns to the crowd and speaks of the high cost of discipleship. Hate mother, hate brother, hate sister, take up your cross and follow, count the cost. Jesus is no spiritual guru muttering ethereal truths, not some self-help technician who for $29.95 plus postage will set you up for life. Jesus is dangerous. Jesus is demanding. An exorbitant operator inviting you on the most costly trip you'll ever take. So this isn't a PBS special on spirituality where we all sit back in our comfy chairs and think a few big thoughts about God, receive a few interesting but essentially costless insights, and then turn out the lights and go to bed. This is Jesus. This is discipleship. In case anybody thinks you're going to get out of this with one morning a week, 10% off the top before taxes, Jesus lays his cards on the table face up. As it turns out, he's playing for your house, your Tesla, your home entertainment center, the shirt off your back, father, mother, brother, sister. You cut the cards with Jesus, and you're going to walk away picked clean. Don't look at a tower until you've figured out if you've got the bricks. Don't go into battle till you calculate how much you're willing to lose. Finally, he says, whoever does not renounce all that he or she has cannot be my disciple. We're talking hard sell here. We're talking high stakes poker. Well, just how much is this going to cost, Jesus? And he says, standing in the middle of the showroom, leaning back on one of the new models, well, if you gotta ask, you probably can't afford it. Okay, but how much? And then looking you straight in the eye, he says, let's say I take your father, your mother, your brother, your sister. Let's say you give me everything you got down to your Calvin Kleins, in short, your whole life. Now, is that a deal or is that a deal? And if that deal seems to be a good deal too much, I remind you of the unpleasant thought that your whole life is what you're going to end up paying anyway. Whether you pay it to Jesus or Brian Cave or Commerce Bank or Monsanto. Because in the end, it will be the end. It will be the end for each of us. Because in the end, everybody has to let go of father and mother, brother and sister. Let go of everything you've got, Calvin Klein's, everything in life, life itself in the end. Because in the end, we're talking death. There are no pockets in a shroud. There are no luggage racks on hearses. As Robert Capon once said, in the end, you're empty-handed, you're a dead duck loser, whether you go to the cross with Jesus or not. So it's not a question of whether you'll eventually pay the piper. It's a question of which piper are you going to pay? I remember years ago, as the U.S. was about to charge into one of our myriad conflicts in the Middle East, a parishioner said to me, there's nothing worth dying for. Which means, in the end, he would probably have the unpleasant task of dying for absolutely nothing. You're going to pay. And someday you're going to let go of it all. Relatives, possessions, achievements, everybody pays in the end. The only real question is, whom shall we pay? Take up your cross and follow me, says Jesus. Let us be reminded that the one who utters these tough words is on his way to taking up his cross. This soon-to-be-dead Jesus is urging death upon us. This one, though he were God's own son, let go, divested, died, is urging us to do the same. This one who, by every standard the world measures the value of people, is a born loser, he is urging us to follow him and be losers as well. All that stuff we think is so valuable, parents, family, achievements, possessions, even life itself, throw it away, just come and blow it with me. Let go, cut loose, come die with me. Now, from what I can tell, this is not what most of the world is in the market for. I bet those multitudes trotting after Jesus got a good deal smaller after this sermon. I bet the number of his Twitter followers took a nosedive. People do not come out in droves to hear someone say that you win by losing. And perhaps that's why Jesus concludes this sermon in the last verses of the chapter of Luke 14 with the imagery of salt. Salt is great stuff, but only in small quantities. With salt, a little goes a long way. As salt, Jesus' disciples are never too numerous in Clayton or anywhere else, because it takes just a little salt. It takes just a few disciples to turn the world upside down. But he warns, if salt loses its taste, it's not fit for the dunghill. He who has ears to hear, hear. If we as disciples become insipid, preferring instead the sugar substitute of success rather than the salt of Jesus' own sacrificial death, we're not going to save anybody. The world is already feeding on the NutraSweet religion of self-interested cruelty mixed with a dose of spiritual and material achievement. Brownie point tallying, idolatry to family, possessions, achievements, and all the other crafty ways we have to attempt to grasp life for ourselves rather than letting go and letting God. If you've got ears to hear, hear. Jesus saves only losers. He has come to seek and to save those who are lost. The loser, he has come to raise who? The dead. In short, he's come for you and me because how tough it is to admit we are all born losers in that we are all born to die. I know that most of you are in excellent shape right this minute, but life's not done with you yet. Life, this life, as good as it gets, in the end cost everything you've got. And that's bad news in a world that worships success. But in the words of Jesus, it's good news, because everything you've got just happens to be the exact cost of discipleship. You've already got what you need to be cut in on the deal. All it costs is just one life, and fortunately, one life is what you've got. Welcome to the party. You've got ears to hear. He raises us, he takes us, he saves us, not because we're thrifty, brave, clean, reverent, and cheerful, but because we're dead losers. The good news is he likes to party only with the lost, and he likes to raise only the dead. And when the church gets all tied down, tame, and polite, we really aren't worth much to anybody, and we deserve to be thrown on the dunghill with all the other cheap lies and success and eternal life substitutes that the world is already in the market for. But I told you, Jesus is determined to let loose. Jesus is determined to party. He's a high roller, and he's not going to leave the game until he's taken everything you've got, your life. I don't know how long it will take you to hide among the multitudes before he calls your name and makes you either ante up or leave the table. A while back, I got a call from a parishioner, the kind of call rectors don't like to get. "I hold you personally responsible for this," she said. "Me? I'm only the rector. I don't have any power." "It's just absurd," shouted this mother. "An honor roll student at Clayton with a bright future in front of her, and you're encouraging her to become a priest." "Well," I said, "that is kind of absurd. I doubt she's received any training in liturgics in high school, but there'll be plenty of time for that, and she'll get the hang of it quickly." "Look," said the mother, "this is no laughing matter. I hold you responsible. You're encouraging her. You're filling her head with those religious ideas. You ingratiated yourself with her. You encouraged her to become an acolyte, and now she wants all this foolishness." "Now look, madam," I said, keeping my priestly composure, "who was it who took her to be baptized?" She said, "Well, me and her father." "She told me somebody told her Bible stories. Who told her those Bible stories? Who got her to Sunday school? Who let her go off with Marty Chapman on the summer youth group mission trip?" But, "Don't butt me," I said. "It's your fault. She believed all that stuff. You're the reason she's gone and wants to throw it all away. I believe you're the one who introduced her to Jesus, not me." "But all we ever wanted her to be was an Episcopalian," she said. "Well, I'm sorry. You've gone and made a disciple. This Jesus thing is very expensive. If you've got ears to hear, hear. Amen."